You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to The Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Archaeology Show, episode 281.
On today's show, we talk about the Archaios Film Festival and interview two of the short film selection creators.
Let's dig a little deeper into the films.
It's true.
Welcome to the show.
Hello.
All right. So this is going to be a little bit different because we're going to have one section here, a little short section where we just kind of talk about this film festival. But yes, in sections two and three, I interviewed two of these short film selection creators.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there were 10 short films selected to participate in this film festival. And the festival is from October 14th to 20th. And since these films are all kind of anthropology, archaeology, history related, we were asked to, you know, review. I think some of the team did do some reviews of the films.
Yeah.
And we were given the opportunity to interview some of the creators. So that was a really cool opportunity for us.
Yeah, actually, yeah, some of our APN team members have done some of the reviews on some of the short films.
Mm-hmm.
And Rachel and I didn't participate, so we could do some of the interviewing.
Yeah.
And because we didn't want to like cloud all that into that.
But
anyway, the film festival is really cool because it's actually virtual. There is a in-person component, but it's actually virtual as well. So from October 14th to the 20th, if you go to the webpage, which is linked down in the show notes, you can, I'm actually not sure what it looks like because we never participated in this before, but if you go to the website, presumably around or slightly before that time, you can go there. You're going to be, you register for free because it doesn't cost anything. And you're going to be given some kind of a token or password or something like that because you only get access to the films for a short period of time because these are creators' works. You don't get it forever. And you get a short period of time to see the films. It's a few days. It's not forever. And
looks like 7 days.
7 days.
Yeah.
Right.
They have some very clear instructions on their website. So,
that's right. That's right. Yeah. And then you can watch the films, you take a look and participate. But there also are in-person viewings, which are taking place at Florence, South Carolina, Darlington, South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina, Fort Worth, Texas, Mobile, Alabama, and Chicago, Illinois.
Quite a lot of places, but they are kind of concentrated in the Southeast. So,
right.
Yeah.
And Chicago.
And Chicago. Yeah.
And Texas. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure they're all happening at the same time as October 14th to the 20th.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen any other dates on there. And I was trying to get out of the creators if those dates were going to stay the same. I think they're still trying to kind of line out some of those details. But just follow their socials. They're on Facebook. They're on their website here.
Mm-hmm.
You can get all that, again, from our link in the show notes.
Yeah, so, definitely. And these films, the short films that we've been able to watch anyway, are very much worth your time because they are so cool.
Yeah.
And the two creators that we were able to interview had two such incredibly different films too, which was also really neat because it just shows this like wide variety of people out there creating really cool content, and you get such drastically different stories, but both equally interesting.
Yeah, so the first one you're going to hear is, it's a series called Curiosity Trek.
Yes.
And it was created by Andrew Davis, and he's in Columbia, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually for a network, I guess, down there called SCETV.
Yeah.
And it's, I guess it's probably called something like South Carolina Education TV or
something like that. Yeah.
And he's been working with them. This was the first season, and they're working on season two right now.
Yep.
But it's just I think it's a 10 episode series, if I'm not mistaken. Six. That's right. I did the interview. You think I would know that, but you just edited it.
I just edited it. So I've got it all fresh in my brain.
Right. So it was a couple episodes that he submitted for the series. One of them was selected.
Yes.
And it's the episode that we talked about basically. And you can hear all about it.
It's the most amazing story. Yeah. We won't go into it too much, but like what I loved about this film was the whole taking an artifact and connecting the history, the written history, the oral history, and the artifact, and like the archaeology, and bringing all that together into one big story.
Right.
Because with artifacts, you don't always have a big story, but this one really, really does. And it's so cool to corroborate it throughout the history, the written history as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, the cool thing is, while this is going to be on the Archaios Film Festival, this mm-hmm. particular series, you actually found this on PBS.
Yeah, you can go watch it now. I just typed in the name. We'll find the link that we used because it just seemed to be like a PBS website that has all the episodes available to watch. And yeah, it's a great series. Again, I love building context around a single artifact, which was Andrew's goal, it sounds like. And you'll hear more mm-hmm. about that in the interview with him. But he wants to build that bigger story around these individual items. So season one is really built on that idea. And there's some really great episodes. So definitely check it out beyond just this one film that was selected for the film festival.
Indeed. All right. And then the second one was an interview with creator Alessio Consorte and his translator.
Yeah, it's like a way different. just like from the editing perspective, I actually just left in all his Italian.
Yeah.
And then because he answers Chris's questions in Italian and then his translator jumps in and helps. But like he also speaks English as well. So like it's a little bit of like just the both of them sort of like trying to convey his answers to your questions. Right. And it was definitely a different experience editing wise for me. But I think it turned out pretty cool. You can mm-hmm. really hear his passion when he's speaking in Italian, even if you don't understand the words that he's saying. So
it's really cool, too, because I do have to explain something here because you're probably not going to see, well, you're not going to see the film before you hear this podcast.
Right.
If you're listening to the show in real time, you're going to hear this. And then if you go watch the films, you're not gonna be able to see the films until they come out.
Until the 14th. Yeah.
Yeah. But you're going to have the context that we didn't have because we actually did get access to the films ahead of time.
Yeah.
And when we were watching this, we were kind of like, why was this so shaky a little bit? You know, mm-hmm. why was this so shaky? But he had his camera on a tripod and he actually didn't want any dialogue in the short film. Yeah. He intended to go do a longer film later on, but the guy actually died when he went back mm-hmm. a year later. So he didn't get to do it. But he wanted a no dialogue, just watching him do this whole pottery process and this whole thing. And you'll understand all that when you hear the thing. But I thought it was really interesting that when this guy started in this old shack, just like slamming this huge thing of pottery down on the table, it was shaking the whole building. This clay. Yeah, the clay. It was shaking this whole building.
Yeah.
And he had to take his camera off the tripod and basically hold it.
Yeah.
Because it was just too
so violent.
Yeah. So then you ended up with this kind of handheld camera motion, and you really do see it just kind of come off the tripod in real time and watch him shooting it. So I asked him about that too. It was like, what's going on there?
Yeah.
So.
Well, but Alessio's point with this film was to sort of show this basically ancient pottery process.
That hasn't changed in hundreds of years.
It hasn't changed in hundreds of years. And this one very old man who was the shop owner, it was following his process through, like you're talking about with the clay and making these plates, which I think mm-hmm. was probably the main part of his business, was making just like pottery plates. But another aspect of his business as well was making these little bird whistles too. Mm-hmm. And
big bird whistles, really.
Yeah, actually they were. Yeah, it was kind of big, wasn't it? But honestly, if you don't listen to anything else in the rest of this podcast, go listen to that whistle. My mouth dropped open when I was editing to hear the whistle and the different sounds it can make depending on whether there's water in it or not. It was amazing. You have to go listen to that part.
Yeah.
It was so cool.
So,
but yeah, that was a little bit more of an anthropology type of mm-hmm. thing because it's like this like living, it's sort of this living history of a process that is super old and continues to be done in the same way today. Mm-hmm. And we have, you know, historical or archaeological evidence of it happening probably for hundreds of years. And then people are still doing it in this town of artisans. So really a neat but totally different type of film.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think with that, I would take a look at your show notes, bookmark the page, and wait to register for the film festival. I don't know if you can register now or not and get your credentials, but, you know, go check that out. Go follow them on Facebook because they'll probably have some announcements when you can do that if you're in the area. I know we're going to be traveling and we're getting to North Carolina around the time of the film festival. So and I know I've got a pretty heavy work schedule, but I was going to try to go down to Columbia.
Yeah, we're only an hour from Columbia where we're going to be. So we could easily do that as long as it fits with our work schedules.
I know.
But yeah.
I know. I was going to try to see because they haven't actually come out with a schedule in Columbia yet on when the films are being shown and what's happening. But I was hoping to at least pop down for some of it. So
yeah, for sure.
If you're in the Columbia, South Carolina area for the festival, maybe we'll see you. But otherwise, hopefully you get to check some of it out. But I think with that, we'll leave it to the interviews and let us know what you think. All right.
Bye.
See you on the other side. Okay. Welcome to the Archaeology Show. And on this segment, we are going to talk to Andrew Davis of Curiosity Trek, and he has submitted an episode of Curiosity Trek, which is a series. And you know what? We actually found it on PBS, on the PBS app. You can watch the whole series. But an episode of this series, episode 4, was submitted to the Archaeos. And we were talking about this before we recorded. We're not actually sure how to pronounce this, but we're talking that go find the website. It's all the information is in the show notes. But the Archaeos or Archaeos Film Festival that's premiering this October, you can see this episode. And it's about this person named Lieutenant George Dixon. But we'll talk about that. But first, welcome to the show, Andrew Davis.
Hey, thanks for having me, Chris.
Yeah, no problem. So first, let's talk about the series in general before we get to this particular episode. What was the inspiration for creating Curiosity Trek?
Well, being a lifelong student of history, I have always had a passion for the subject, and I've been at South Carolina ETV for about 7 years now, and about a couple of years ago, I was approached by one of my supervisors to come up with an idea for a new series, and so I did some brainstorming, and I kind of just figured, okay, what's something that ETV has either never done before or something that's not been done in a very long time, and so after doing some racking in my brain, I decided, why not a show about historical artifacts? Because I love going to museums. I love traveling. And whenever I go visit historic places, there's always either one object or like a set of objects that just draws your attention. And you're like, what's the story with these things? So I figured, hey, why not do something similar along the lines of what are some successful shows on the History Channel. I grew up watching shows like American Pickers and Pawn Stars, and I figured, hey, why not make an educational show kind of in that same vein, where we travel throughout South Carolina and highlight artifacts of historical value, things that are either historically valuable or that are just cool or weird, or they're tied to historic South Carolina figures. Because the people tied to these objects or relics may be gone, but their stories are kind of immortalized in these objects left behind. So why not tour South Carolina and show people things that they don't get to see every day?
Nice. And how did you decide what to nail down for these episodes with there being probably a wealth of information to choose from?
Oh, absolutely. That's the one thing about history is that there is always content to produce stuff on. It's a vast subject. But when I was first coming up with the series, I traveled throughout South Carolina visiting different historical sites and working with different museums and organizations to go, okay, do you have any interesting artifacts that you feel visitors should see if they come visit you, or things that are just interesting that they don't get to see every day? So I did a bunch of scouting trips all over South Carolina and just a couple of years ago. So, but then after that, I came up with this massive list of artifacts to choose from. And then ultimately, I went over to our folks in the education department, because the stuff that we produce has to be tied to the 2020 social studies standards. So I took this big list and I sent it over to the education folks, and they helped me narrow down what are the most prominent ones they would like to see that educators can find use with versus ones that are maybe fun or cool but not quite educational. And once I got the short list down, the hard part was, okay, who's actually interested in participating in this? Who can we showcase without time constraints? Because communication is not 100% perfect. Things happen. And if one object or artifact doesn't really work, like if there's a time conflict, for example, coming up with a plan B, and we ended up actually having to do that in season one. There was an artifact I wanted to see at the South Carolina State Museum, but due to a scheduling conflict and they were having their roof replaced, we ended up having to go with another one for the last episode of season one. So we narrowed it down to six, and it's going to be six per season. And yeah, it just happened to turn out that the Edisto Shell Rings was the pilot.
Nice. Nice. All right. Well, episode 4 of this season was chosen as a selection for this year's 2024 film festival. So why don't you tell us about that?
Certainly. When I was first coming up with this show, it was actually the coin found on the Hunley. That was what my mind first went to when I thought of a show about cool artifacts. What are some prominent South Carolina artifacts that we can show in this series? And when I was first coming up with the concept of the show, Lieutenant Dixon's coin, it's such a fascinating story. It has to be told. And the Hunley is one of those chapters of South Carolina's history where it's like the more you learn about it, just the more bizarre and crazy the story gets. But this coin was found on board the H.L. Hunley Confederate submarine. And this object is arguably just as legendary as the submarine itself. I mean, considering when you hear the phrase or term life preserver, you're probably thinking about either like a helmet or a bulletproof vest, not a coin. And the fact that in the height of the Civil War, in one of the bloodiest battles in the early part of the war, which was the Battle of Shiloh in 1862, Lieutenant George Dixon took a mini ball to his left thigh. And if that coin had not been in that exact spot to absorb the brunt of the damage, he could have lost his leg and probably his life. But he got shot in the leg, and the coin was actually bent. And if I remember correctly, you can actually – there are still traces of that lead mini ball in the $20 coin today, which is just crazy. And he carried that coin around with him as his life preserver, his good luck charm after the battle, even had it engraved, you know, my life preserver, GED, Battle of Shiloh, April 1862. So – the story of this coin, you can't help but wonder, was it coincidence, one big massive coincidence, or was it destiny that led Lieutenant Dixon to meet Horace Lawson Hunley in Mobile, Alabama, and get connected with this iron fish boat that was being constructed in the Park and Lyons machine shop in Mobile? And of course, there were two crews that had died on the Hunley before Dixon took command. So, like when I asked the question, is it destiny or coincidence? If it wasn't for that coin saving his life, he would not have made history on that cold, dark evening of February
17, 1864. Yeah.
And it was in legend. They weren't really sure if the legend was true or not. Like, there have been newspaper reportings about it after the Battle of Shiloh. But it wasn't really confirmed until Clemson University archaeologist Maria Jacobson plunged her hand into the muck around Lieutenant Dixon's remains, and her fingers felt the touch of a familiar object. And she pulled it out and had it washed off, and there it was, Dixon's coin that he carried around with him everywhere. Even when the Hunley attacked the Housatonic, it was there. So legend became fact.
Yeah, I think that part was super cool just watching the video because, you know, as archaeologists, you do go to sites with research behind you and expecting maybe to find certain things, but not specific things. You know what I mean? Like you go somewhere and you're like, oh, I expect to find this kind of a projectile point or this kind of a, you know, an object or something like that. But to go somewhere and think, well, we might find this exact object if something might be true. And I don't know if, you know, They knew of the legend. They knew who was, you know, probably in the Hunley, right? They knew Dixon was probably there. And I don't know if they expected that coin to actually be on his person or if that was just a surprise when they found it and said, oh, wow, he really does carry this with him everywhere he goes. But to have it inscribed like that and just to prove that myth and have that become a fact and that legend, like you said, is just, you know, kind of a dream for an archaeologist. And every archaeologist gets that question from their friends and family when they meet them is, what's the coolest thing you've ever found? Well, she's got that story nailed for the rest of her life, probably.
Absolutely. And I finished the book by Brian Hicks called Sea of Darkness, which is all about the history of the Hunley and Horace Lawson Hunley and Lieutenant Dixon. And they had a hunch that they might find the coin, but they weren't 100% sure. And sure enough, Maria Jacobson just happened to find it right underneath the forward conning tower. And it's just, it was amazing how this deep-rooted legend, this South Carolina mythology or folklore actually turned out to be 100% fact. Though there are certain parts of the story that have changed over the years after they've done more research and more facts have surfaced, pun intended. like the whole sub-story of the coin of oh, I forget her name, the lady who was supposedly Lieutenant Dixon's love interest, Queenie Bennett is her name. It took me a second to think of it. Apparently, Queenie Bennett, that whole part of the story has been confirmed not to be real. It was just a coin that was given to Dixon. We don't know who gave it to him. It was just in his pocket at the time. But the whole romantic part of it with Queenie Bennett is completely false now, especially since it just came out not too long ago that Queenie Bennett was only like 12 years old at the time. So that, yeah, that probably isn't true. So
yeah, probably not. No. So what's, is the Curiosity Trek series, are you still producing that? Is it still going? Is there still more seasons that you're doing?
Absolutely. We just finished the first season, and season two is gearing up later this fall.
Great.
The six artifacts, three have been confirmed, but three are sort of tentative at the moment.
Okay.
The shooting begins later this fall, and three episodes are being packaged each for broadcast shows, 2646. The first episode, which I just finished producing, is all about ancient history in South Carolina. So that one has been packaged with the Eremotherium giant sloth skeleton down at the Charleston Museum. There is the Edisto shell rings, which is the second segment. And the third one is all about the ancient Egyptian mummified cat case made of bronze from the Ptolemaic era. And the second one that I'm about to produce is all about military history. So that one is going to feature Lieutenant Dixon's coin, the B-25C bomber currently undergoing restoration at Owens Field Airport, and the M-28 Davy Crockett recoilless rifle, and the M-388 tactical battlefield nuke. Never used in battle, but still the fact that they made this thing is just crazy.
Wow. Awesome.
And for the season two, there are three sort of South Carolina folklore or spooky artifacts that we're going to look at. And the idea is that when the time comes for a broadcast package, it's going to be like a Halloween special for next year.
Okay.
And of course, we also have the 250th anniversary of the American Revolutionary War coming up in 2026. So three of the objects in season two of Curiosity Trek are going to be Revolutionary War based. And with that one, we're looking at Patrick Ferguson's grave up in Kings Mountain, the Star Fort at 96, and the one I really want to see is down at Georgetown Museum. They actually have a surviving handwritten letter from the Swamp Fox himself, Francis Marion, to General Nathaniel Greene. And
nice.
Yeah, I cannot wait to see that one. It's going to be a long shoot day considering it's down at Georgetown, but it's going to be a fun one.
Nice, nice. That's very cool. All right. Well, that sounds like a something to look forward to, season two. And for anybody who wants to see these episodes, like I said, you can find them online. We got some links in the show notes, so definitely check that out. But in the meantime, Andrew Davis, thank you for coming on the show and talking about Curiosity Trek episode four and the rest of it. And good luck with everything else.
Thank you, Chris. I'm honored. It's been a privilege, and thank you for taking the time to interview me today.
No problem. All right. We'll be back in a minute. All right. Welcome back to the Archaeology Show. And on this segment, we are interviewing Alessio Consorte, and he has his translator, Sarah, with him. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I thank you for inviting me, and I'm very happy to participate to your show. Your archaeologic show, and thank you for Archaios Film Festival to have in their festival last shop.
So Rachel and I watched the short film, and we'll link to all of that in the show notes and the film festival itself, so people can go participate in the film festival when it's available, and then see the film for themselves. But why did you choose to film the gentleman in the film, and what is his history with the community there?
Okay, I speak in Italian right now, and Sarah translate. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, allora Sara, io sono andato a Castelli, che è un borgo della provincia di Teramo, in Abruzzo, per fare delle riprese per quanto riguarda un altro documentario, sempre di storia, ma relativamente per i musei. Per i musei, okay. Per parlare della ceramica.
Okay, I went to this place to film another documentary about a museum of ceramists. And this place is in Castelli, in the province of Teramo.
Mm-hmm.
very, very okay. beautiful in under the Gran Sasso mountain. It's a very beautiful, mm-hmm. beautiful, magical place, very magic. And I meet this old man, and mm-hmm. he start to talk about pottery and his job and his shop. I mean, and I really fallen like in love. I don't know how to say.
Yeah.
And I say, wow, okay, let me. I'd like to know everything about you, about your shop, and la cosa che mi ha colpito di più è che lui con un'energia, una vitalità all'età di quasi 90 anni.
What I like most was his energy in doing his work at the age at least of 90 years old.
Mm-hmm.
90. And mm-hmm. actually he's dead now. He's dead.
Oh.
Yes. And this summer we had an public conference, and we showed the documentary with some cut, and the people was like crime.
Mm.
And you know, io mi sono sentito onorato di questa cosa, perché comunque abbiamo raccontato un pezzo di storia, ma soprattutto l'energia di un uomo che a 90 anni aveva ancora l'amore di portare avanti il suo lavoro, con un'energia di un ragazzo di 20 anni. Questa è la cosa che mi ha colpito.
I was honored about storytelling his work, because he still have at his age a great energy as a younger man, yeah. and still working and still love his job until the end.
And lui praticamente fabbricava in special modo dei fischietti, ed anche fischietti poi per bambini, e poi
and he especially produce an instrument that is like I don't
yes,
remember
the,
I don't,
the
I
birds
I can explain the word
sí.
yeah
the whistle
for
yeah.
for also
whistle yes, yes. whistle and the family give me the one which was in the movie and mm-hmm. In the plaza with 2,000 yeah. people, and I was like feel wow, I mean thank you so
wow.
much, and I bring that today because I want to let you hear the special
yeah.
sound, because it's pottery, but it's magical. I mean, if you put mm-hmm. water inside, you can hear another type of sound. It's very, very special sound. And my friend is a musicist. He wants to record the different tones of this special pottery.
Instrument. Yeah.
Yes. And actually, okay, I speak Italian. Quando sono andato nella sua bottega, che è una bottega rimasta nel 1850, quindi fine 800, ha proprio gli oggetti di quel tempo. Ecco perché comunque l'ho chiamata l'ultima
when
bottega.
I went at his workplace, that was made in 1850. Mm-hmm. He still have the same object and the same instruments to work from his
yeah.
time, from this time. It's like a time capsule.
I was going to ask, did he inherit from his father, a family member, or how did he get the shop?
Perché, because, okay, in italiano, perché tutta Castelli è una città che nasce nel 1500, ma probabilmente ci sono origini anche prima, cioè storicamente si è sempre fatta la ceramica in questo paese, quindi lui è nato in mezzo agli artigiani, ma come tutto il paese, perché lì tutto il paesino praticamente tutti fanno ceramica, ci saranno per esempio 50-60 artigiani che tutti i giorni fanno ceramica.
Ok, the Castelli town was born mm-hmm. around 50 of the 14th century, and then old town was all the people that live in this town knows how to work with pottery, and then everyone knows how to fix and how to work it, and then he was born in this town, and he grew up like artistic son, you know what I mean? So he understand, and he was inside his DNA, sort of like this.
Right. Okay.
La cosa che mi ha diciamo sorpreso di più sono stati i suoni all'interno di questa bottega, i suoni, le luci. Quindi quando ho iniziato poi a chiedere a questo signore di poterlo filmare, di poter raccontare un po' della sua vita, praticamente ho deciso di non farlo parlare, ma di seguirlo nel suo lavoro per ascoltare i rumori ambientali, i rumori della bottega.
What I liked most when I went to his shop is the lights, the sounds, and I decide with him while filming to not let him speak, but only recording with the natural sound of the work.
And I ambient, like that too. And ambient.
And the ambient.
Because,
yes.
This place, because it's under the mountain, it was full of bird, of the 100 species of, specie, come si dice specie, di uccelli.
Types.
Of bird, sì. And I decide to mix the sound and the feeling and his face, his work, because I think that a man in 90 years old have that power, that feeling. He don't have to speak, he just have to do, and you have to feel, just to give image, sound of his art, his soul.
Well, you could really see his, like you said, his energy when he was taking those lumps of clay and putting them together and smacking them with that paddle and pounding on the table. And it was really, you could see that. I couldn't believe it, his age.
See, unbelievable. 90. And and in that moment, for example, I was just start in the day to film him, and I had a problem with the camera, with the tripod, you know, because it start to vibrating everything in the house, in the store. And so I had to take the camera in the hands and watch him, you know, and was è proprio lì in quel momento che un buon documentarista, in quel caso, non deve più badare alla forma, anche se alla forma cinematografica deve dare un senso, per arrivare a filmare, perché in quel momento è più importante quello che ti sta dando una persona, e quindi che ti sta dando di suo, della sua anima, del suo lavoro, eccetera, che tu stai filmando, che non la forma, cioè il cavalletto, la dinamica dell'inquadratura. Importante, quindi in quel momento è stato proprio filmare, perché one shot, una volta.
In this moment, when everything feels like no, I can record it, I decide to follow what is going on and try to film and record the soul of this person. Right. And keep going on what's happening, and still record how
without tripod and hands, because it was impossible with the tripod. So I decided to let him go and don't stop that energy.
Right. So did anyone take over the shop when he passed? Is it still going?
His son. Son.
Okay.
But I mean, he was in fighting with all the people in Castelli, fight like because you know, small village, big fire, you know. But after the the documentary in the Plaza. It was 200 people. It was very, very magic night. After, they start to make peace.
Mm-hmm.
Become again friendly. And it was very, very special night in honor of Mr. Vincenzo Di Simone. Okay. And it was nice, nice. So he have the shop now. And actually, the shop, nobody can touch inside because it's historical. It's historical.
Okay.
Because
Very cool.
We have 300 years, that store. And
right.
Yes, it's very amazing. I mean, very unusual.
Okay. Well, I really enjoyed it. It was really, really well done. We really liked it. I liked that there was no dialogue, no words. It was just watching the energy, like you said, and it was really cool. It was very timely that you captured it, you know, before he died. So
yes,
it was,
And actually just because every time it's an independent movie, I have money problem, but in the same time, it doesn't mean that if you have much money, you can do better.
Right, right.
Yeah. But right. At the same time, I wish to record again him and let him speak about everything, like 100 years of history of that place, you know. But after he died, because I lost 1 year, I didn't have so much money to go back and filming him again, and I was like, it's not, I mean, I was like, triste, come si dice.
Sad.
Right.
Sad.
Sí. Yeah.
Sad.
Yeah.
And actually, I have this, questo ricordo che la famiglia mi ha lasciato, che è il suo fischietto.
And now I have the whistle, this, like, something to remember him.
And I have here, I'd like to record right the sound. Listen, this is without water.
Okay.
Sorry, eh? Okay. This is without water. Okay, now I put the water inside.
Okay.
And listen the modulation of the sound. Let me see.
Oh, wow.
Unbelievable, eh?
Wow, that is crazy. Yeah, that's really cool. Nice. Very cool.
It's water modulating. And he was a genius to do this. He have now, I think they open a museum of the whistles because lui ha lasciato circa, non so, tipo 200 fischietti, ma tutti diversi dall'altro, tutti ispirati alla storia. For esempio, il cammello fischietto.
Okay, he left like more than 200 whistles, and I think they will dedicate a museum for him because each one is different, and one is dedicated to camel, and then gli altri
Arabic like or saint, everything like pyramid, something like that. I mean, very strange, and bird like Taunton bird. 100 birds that he imagined, that bird that doesn't exist, like, just like in the fantasy.
Right.
Very, very strange man, very genius, I mean.
Indeed. Okay, well, I'm glad we were able to get this interview in. Thank you very much for joining us all the way from Italy. Thank you, Sarah, for coming on and helping with the translations. Yes.
Thank you.
And and congratulations on selection at the Archaeos Film Festival. And again, thank you for coming on and telling us all about this amazing place and this man and the shop and the film. So thank you again for all of that.
And I'm really honored to do this interview and to participate in Archaeos Film Festival, and really appreciate to Jen, Mr. Jen.
Yes. All right. Thank you. Thanks for listening to The Archaeology Show. Feel free to comment and view the show notes on the website at www.arcpodnet.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at arcpodnet. Music for this show is called I Wish You Would Look from the band Sea Hero. Again, thanks for listening and have an awesome day. This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Culturo Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Rachel Roden.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.